What did you make of the All Blacks?
mate, the All Blacks, they're showing signs of improvement.
But was it a case of they just had to change their name to finally be Griquas?
I don't know, mate. I don't know.
This show is brought to you by Auto and General, insurance that stands with you through every collision.
Zelt, the Nations Championship, the first three rounds are over. It's like the Soccer World Cup is over. The Little Magician was finally blanketed. I am gutted, shattered. But the one saving grace is I wasn't a loose head prop for Wales.
Wow, yeah. I mean, respect to the front row and the replacement front row forwards for Wales for surviving that game of the weekend at Kings Park. All credit to them for their guts and courage. But, I mean, with all due respect, I'm not sure that those guys...
Well, do we respect? Do we like?
No, look, I mean, they put their bodies on the line and they tried their hardest, but Wales have got a lot of work to do to catch up.
Mate, I just all respect that the Oak was playing loose and decided to play. You're playing Carlo Sardi, and after 40 minutes, you think, you look up and old Walker comes on, Godzilla. I mean, come on.
I think it's the first time I've seen a front row actually ask the second row and Lucy's not to bind too tightly because they're going to be going back so fast they don't want to die.
Every time there was a Bok or Wales knock on and the ball was just hoofed and Andrew Brace screamed, advantage over! The Welsh prop said, thanks! Thanks!
You just saved my life!
And he called advantage over after like 2 seconds as if, I don't want to put you through this mess that you're going to go through. So I asked Gavin Ritchie, was at the game in Durban, humidity, he said, no, more dew. And it was very wet, the ball. When Peter Steph the toy drops, knocks on two passes, you must know it's weather conditions, okay? It's not skill. But Wales got 40, the Wales lost 43-0. And I watched those post-match interviews and the boxer talking about being inaccurate and, you know, disciplined. And don't we like say we make good gains? How? How? You got zero. 73-0 in Cardiff with a roof closed and 43-0 in wet, dewy conditions. How did you make any gains?
Well, I suppose when they put that match on the schedule, the Welsh were like, we've got to try and not concede 100 points in this game. And so to come away with 43 at face value, I suppose, is a 30-point improvement on the last match in South Africa. But when you look at the quality of the Bok team and the guys who weren't there, maybe not.
So five of that starting 15 make a World Cup final starting 15 right now, if you had to pick it. Only two started in the same jersey, Jasper Wiese and Gerardus Steenkamp. And you know what? They were the only two needed. The Lucid properly destroyed them and the A2 ran over them. And then Damian Delaney went from 13 to 12. And just looked like he wanted to be back at 13 in that game. It was. Look, there was a time not so long ago, and we go back to 2017 and 2018, where Wales were knocking us over. They'd beaten us a few times, and Russie took his first team to Washington, D.C. He's beat him. They lost to Wales 24-22 in the last minute. And then at the end of that season, and what people forget is that Russie and Jacques Nienaber won 7 out of 14 tests in their first ever season together, 2018. They went to the Principality in Cardiff and they got pumped by Wales. People were like, where are the real Springboks? And that's why Russie keeps on saying, listen here, guys, we've been there. They have been there.
Yeah.
It wasn't 43-0 or 73-0, but they have been there. But what do you take out of... what do you take out of England, Scotland, and Wales for South Africa? Because the only thing that now matters in the next 2 months in this country is rugby's greatest rivalry. One place to, if you look at the Nations Championship, Southern Hemisphere, one place to, if you look at World Cups, 4, 3, 7 out of 10, one place to, it's South Africa at home against New Zealand. What do you take out of the July Nations Championship?
I think it confirms the savvy of the World Cup organisers for putting the Springboks and the All Blacks on the same side of the draw, because otherwise you could basically pick the 2027 World Cup winner or finalists right now. I think it's All Blacks and Springboks, and I think there's a reasonable gap between the Springboks and the All Blacks. And I think after that, the drop-off is a sheer drop. So those Northern Hemisphere teams, yes, they're away from home. Yes, they've traveled. But just emphatic victories for the Southern Hemisphere teams, or for New Zealand and South Africa. And I think aside from France, the Northern Hemisphere doesn't really have a serious contender that can challenge the All Blacks and the Springboks.
Well, you know, there's been this thing of like, keep South Africa out of the Six Nations. We don't want to turn it into a Seven Nations. Keep Italy there. And then it's like, but how well would South Africa do in the Six Nations? Well, I do know if their teams had to come here for two or three games, we've seen what's happened. 45 points England conceded, 42 Scotland, and Wales 43. So the consistency there is South Africa getting 40 plus. New Zealand 47 against Italy, 40 against Ireland, and that day under the roof, 34 against France. So over those six matches, the All Blacks and the Springboks are averaging 41.8, 42 points against the Six Nations. Come on, man. Come on! I want the greatest rivalry.
Yes, it's going to be
glorious.
Let's
talk real rugby. Yes. Let's talk All Blacks Springboks. Let's talk All Blacks Springboks. What did you make of the All Blacks?
mate, the All Blacks, they're showing signs of improvement. Their defense has improved. The Springboks and the All Blacks this weekend showed a sort of reversion to quality defense. And I think the All Blacks are making strides there too. I said Rennie needs some time to pull this team back together. This is one of the worst All Black teams that he's inherited in terms of their results. Within the context of New Zealand's rugby history, they generally have a very high win rate. So they are making strides. There is signs of progress. Ruben Love has surprised me. I think he is a guy who can potentially play at test level for an extended period. I thought he's played quite well. But again, you know, we keep talking about it. There are lots of options for them in the backs. It's up front where we've got to try find some answers. And I thought there were some signs there that they're getting it together. Whether that translates to when they play the Springboks, we're going to find out. But certainly in terms of their closest other rivals, the All Blacks are improving. Their commitment to carry ball and keep ball is noble, but I think it's a shortcut to some problems. Their error rate is quite high. But again, you don't really know what Rennie's trying to do there in terms of the personnel he's got available to him right now and what answers he's trying to get out of them. But yeah, the All Blacks are a reasonable team, mate.
If you look at the All Blacks, you've had three test matches to see them now. What is significantly, if at all, different to the All Blacks we saw under Razor Robertson, who lost two test matches in 24 in South Africa, were blanked in Cape Town, 18-12, couldn't score a try, beat us 24-17 at Eden Park, and then got humiliated 43-10 in Wellington. So he won one out of four against South Africa. 80% of the players are the same. What have you seen that's different?
Mm.
And for whatever one may say about Ireland, to put 40 past Ireland is a good effort.
Totally. I'm going to ask you the same question, but I'm going to answer. My perception of it is that Rennie's got these guys playing a high-tempo attacking game, high-volume attacking game. They're trying to keep the ball alive. It's taken some time to switch on, but that sort of fiery defense has started to show itself. Their tackle dominance is up. There's an aggression there. And I said to you at the start, after the Super Rugby final, big wings are back. Big outside backs are back. And he's leaning in that direction. Caleb Clark, Murby, he's kind of going in that direction where he's going to have real physical bookends to give them momentum in their attack. And I think that might be a point of difference for New Zealand, you know. So quite keen to see where that goes. Will Jordan, obviously on fire, gets a sniff and scores. I think they still have to find some answers around the makeup of their best combinations when Richie Munga comes back. But Ruben Love showed some fire there and some potential, I think. Big game temperament. So I think those are significant. I mean, Ruben Love didn't get a sniff with Razor. And I think from a leadership perspective, Artie Sevier gives them, I don't know if more unified, but certainly like it's something more tangible. Like you can... That All Blacks team under Razor, they always felt like there was something bubbling under the surface that didn't connect. And I'm not saying it's Scott Barrett's fault. I'm just saying there was something there that wasn't a connection. With Artie Sevilla there, you get the feeling like they're playing for each other.
Well, when you listen to Artie Sevilla talk and you listen to the All Blacks talk, it's like they talk culture, they talk mana, they talk the jersey, but they talk it like they mean it. This coming together on the side. When Dave Rennie was interviewed, he was like, I don't know what's going to happen in South Africa, or as they call it, Africa. But what I do know is that we're going to come back with a lot of answers a year out from the World Cup, and that makes it a great tour, regardless of the results. And he says, to get this team together and spend 2 months in South Africa, play 7 games, we can only be the richer and the wiser for it. What I enjoyed about that island performance was it's the first time I've seen the All Blacks play so direct since they beat us at Ellis Park. And they, that day they played for Fozzie, they played for themselves, and they were outstanding in what they had to, in front of 62,000, the way they came back, scored 4 tries, and beat us, and especially that last 2-3 minutes when they were just all over us at Ellis Park. And under Razor, they were just side to side, lateral, one pass away from greatness, one pass away from greatness, quick hands. And I just felt, and I think maybe that surprised Ireland a bit, was just how physical they were in wanting to take the ball up, take it into attack. And they weren't just relying on a Artie Sevilla. It was, you know, a Josh Lord just looked like a, you know, we kind of like questioned their second row.
More than questioned it, mate.
No, we have just said they don't have any. But he looked like a lord out there, you know. And, you know, Luke Jacobson showed like mongrel, and he showed. I just felt their physicality was something I haven't seen over an 80-minute period in the All Blacks for a long time. And I did feel that they lost something and Ruben Love went off. Immediately, I mean, he's a 10 that he's played. He started all 3 test matches at 10. He's been the outstanding player for the Hurricanes. He's kicked magnificently. You know, he kicked every conversion he got. He even kicked it on one leg.
Yeah.
But I just felt that I felt it was a statement performance from them to say to South African rugby public, you're going to get the real All Blacks here. And I think that's fantastic for rugby's greatest rivalry. What you wanted is the best of the All Blacks in this country. And the one question mark I will always have around them for this tour is when they pick their best 23 and we pick our best 23, you know, it's going to be a toss-up. Someone has to play particularly well to win that. But the moment it gets to the second, third and fourth test matches and you've got 4 injuries, the body count is starting to show, I do believe that's where our depth comes into play.
Mm.
And it's not so much can New Zealand's first team beat South Africa's first team. It's can New Zealand's second team beat South Africa's second team.
Mm.
And I think that's what Rassie was playing at the whole of July is we've, outside of England, we really saw South Africa's second 15 with a sprinkling of first team players knock over whatever was thrown at them. And it's like, okay, I've got comfort that I can slot a guy in to play in test number 2, 3 and 4 to win the series.
Mm. No, that's great, great, great shots. Agree with all of that, mate. I think
fabulous.
Yeah, fabulous, mate. Have another one. yeah, no, that does make sense. I mean, there's definitely that. I mean, Rennie's history is littered with teams that are overtly physical. I think that the depth thing may even be a first 15 versus first 15. I think even as soon as you start talking bench versus bench, even there, I think you're going to see a difference. I mean, with all due respect, Luke Jacobson, Peter Steph De Toy. you know, Sia Kulisi, we've got Paul De Villiers in the mix, we've got Cam Hunter, we've just got so many guys that can come in there. Their starters, I'm not sure, in some positions are really a match for R15. And as soon as you look at that bench, I think it drops off quite emphatically. So it's going to be a hell of a game. One thing we know about the All Blacks is they'll be well prepared and technically they'll be on point. It just comes down to the physicality. That's where the clear advantage is for the box, I think. And scrum and line out, specifically scrum, can they cope with what the Springboks bring? That sheer grunt and power there, it's quite hard to get around that. You know, you can't escape it.
They just played Ireland, their toughest challenge. An Ireland side that we believe has been on the wane for a while, but still, it's Ireland. They ended the Six Nations strongly. Now they come to South Africa and they play 3 matches against our URC teams. Rassie has said he's sending a team of 26 or 28 players to play on the 8th of August against Argentina in Buenos Aires. And he's keeping back 15 or 17 players. His words, to prepare for the test series. So add those numbers together and you get to 45 or 47 players, which tells you they won't be involved in those URC matches against the All Blacks. So what you're going to find is primarily it's the All Blacks playing the Stormers 23 that beat Griquas in the Curry Cup, not the Stormers that play in the URC. And the Stormers that play in the URC, it's their 9 Springboks who are in the forward pack. As nearly every Stormers forward was picked for the Springboks over this July series.
Mm.
They won't be playing against the All Blacks. Now, you would then expect the All Blacks to win 60-20, 50-15, 65-23.
Mm.
Great numbers. What does that do for their prep to come up against a Springbok team? Does it work in their favor or work against them?
So I think there may be a few surprises. I think you may see a few Springboks playing in those URC games. But I think regardless, I think what Rennie needs most is time. And it's less about the quality of who they play and more about them at this point, I think. I think he needs as many games as possible. I mean, it's a really, really short runway to get ready to play the Springboks in South Africa in 2026 to have the limited number of tests he's had. So any opportunity he gets to get those guys out, running their plays, making their calls, decision-making, work effort, I think is valuable to him. I think preferably, obviously, he would like the quality of the opposition to be closer to what the All Blacks are. But remember, he's probably also going to have to mix and match in those games for a variety of reasons. He's going to want to be building his own little bit of depth that he can. And he's also going to be wanting to see different combinations. And he's going to be wanting to look after the guys that he's going to start in the test series. So I think they will be quite introverted and quite introspective, New Zealand, about their objectives in those matches. And obviously, they don't want to be playing games where it's runaway 100-point wins, but I don't think that's going to be the case. I think some of those guys who are on the fringes or coming back from injury are going to feature for those URC teams. I don't think you're going to see Springbok teams, but I think they are going to be reasonably quality.
If you look at the All Blacks, you've watched them play 3 test matches now. A run on 15 that you think would be their strongest, or the one that you would pick.
Mm.
How would you run from 15 to 1?
Jeez.
Would you pick DMAC at fullback?
You see, because I would make quite radical changes there. So I wouldn't pick DMAC at fullback.
So who would you pick?
For me, I would play Jordy Barrett at fullback. Okay. I like Jordy Barrett at fullback. I think he has a unique quality there. He's a big human. He's good under the high ball. Got a big boot. I think he's a valuable asset at the back. I think Will Jordan could be deadly on the wing. He's already proven that. Their all-time record try scorer. DMAC for me would be a guy who offers massive versatility off the bench. You can come in 9, 10, 15, wing, whatever, and make an impact. And he gives you a little bit of agility on the bench in terms of your selections and your composition of forwards and backs. I would go with Ruben at 10 until Richie's available. I would find a hammer at 12. I would roll the dice there. I would try something crazy, whether it's Caleb Clark, whether it's Tava Tava Nawaii out of the blue. I would find a guy who I feel like can go forward there. With maybe Artie Sevilla, I don't know. I would do something crazy. And then at 13, I would go with experience. So I'd probably look at an Anton Leonard Brown there to run the defense. And then up front, it's mix and match, mate. There are no locks to choose from. As much as Tupoluto is the guy who's the experienced bloke against the Springboks, I think he's going to disappear. But I don't know you're going to get anything more than that out of Sam Darry and Josh Lord. So yeah, Tupo Vahi's got a bit of edge to him. I mean, he may be a bit of a stick insect, but he's got an edge to him. He's physical. He wants to get involved in it. And then I think obviously you've got to have a Wallace Atiti in there. And then the front row is a lottery, mate. Cody Taylor, I suppose, for experience. I love the Tongan, Takiayo. He's a guy I would play. And then the Groot is the guy I would go with at loose head. And probably Fletcher Newell at tight head. But it's potato potato there. I mean, it's tough to call.
The thing is, you can look at a
and obviously Cam Roygott.
You can look at a very good run on 15 and a good 23. It's when you go beyond that
totally.
You start thinking, hang on a second.
Who is this guy?
It's like you've just played the Chiefs, now you're playing the Highlanders.
Mm.
It's that kind of like thing. Now you look at our box setup. Now, when he picked his team to play, the original team to play England, I felt that was the World Cup final 15. So if you go Damian Williams at 15, Cheslin, Kurt Lee, Jesse, Damian Delandy, I would, if he's fit, I think Sasha goes into 10. 9, who does he start with at 9? Is it Graham Williams or Kubis Reiner? Again, potato, potato. Jasper, Peter Steph, Sia, Eben, if he's fit, obviously goes in at lock. Who's his lock partner? Who would you go with there?
I mean, a tough choice there. Ruby had a great game on the weekend. It's tough. I mean, I don't know. What is the availability? So Franco Mostert?
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, we kind of like know who's kind of like there.
Mm.
And then you go into the front row. You've got Thomas Tatoi, Carlos Hardy, and Walker Lowe.
Ruan Nokia would be the guy.
Yeah, as your three options. Ruan Nokia at 5 as the form player.
Yeah.
Malcolm Marks. The big question mark is who comes. Hrobis has been the guy at 2 who comes after Malcolm Marks. And then the loose head, you got Oxen Chair, and you got obviously Gerard Steenkamp, I thought was outstanding. You know, on tight end, you got a youngster like Zach Porthen. But you can start picking guys outside of that first cab off the rank.
Yeah, yeah.
Second, third. Where in New Zealand, I don't think you can just yet.
No.
And that, again, Rennie's only had them for 3 test matches. Rossi's had them basically for 8 years to get to that point.
Yeah.
But I just think it makes for an incredibly exciting start to the series. The opening test at Ellis Park, the second one in Cape Town at the DHL Stadium. And from that, you may see where the holes start coming because of body count.
Yeah.
The physicality and the intensity of that. What would they have gained from South Africa knocking over those 3 teams with 3 different sides?
I think the biggest thing for the All Blacks is trying to understand how the Springboks are going to play. And I keep saying this, the Box are not playing traditional Springbok rugby. They're not playing test rugby in some respects. This whole start to the Nations Championship has just been a giant investment in the contestable kicking game and getting some data around what works and what doesn't work. And I'm not sure that's the way the Box are going to play against the All Blacks. I think that's where the uncertainty comes in. Like for me, it's a no-brainer. If the Box play strict test rugby, if they treat every test like it's a final, they win the series 4-0. That's my opinion. But it's also very possible that Rossi experiments with some selections and with tactics, and then it becomes a lot tighter. I mean, Wales, we've laughed them off. They've been terrible. We've destroyed them. We agree this is one of the worst Wales teams that we've witnessed, especially in the sort of professional era. And there's a 15-minute period in that game at King's Park on Saturday where the Box don't win their contestables and can't score any points against Wales. They get 4 entries and no points. And the reality of the contestable kicking game is that it is a lottery. It's a 50-50 contest. The more organized you are, you can slant it towards 60-40, but it's never an 85-15 contest. Like a line-out is a 90% win rate for your team. So there's value in the contestable kicking game, but if you kind of lead with that and everything that kind of is related to that contestable kicking game changes the shape of all the other stuff that you do, and it changes the context of the game for you. And it can be quite easy to kind of go down that rabbit hole and find yourself playing quite a long way away from what are the staples of Springbok rugby. So if you're the All Blacks and you've watched these guys play, your takeaway is you've got to get ready for a lot of bombs. Contestable kicking game is going to be where it gets decided. But there's also the chance that Rossi comes out and says, we're going to scrum and kick to the corners. And that changes everything from your planning as the All Blacks. It would change everything from selections to tactics.
What does Rossi look at and go, I've now seen these All Blacks under Dave Rennie for 3 matches. How different does he try and tell the players that these group of players, even if they're the same players in the way they play, what to expect? Do you think the potential of the physicality of the All Blacks will surprise the Springboks, given what they've been through in July, or do you think they will give them that respect that they're going to come at us hard?
Yeah. No, I think they'll know what's coming. I think the challenge there is for like Jasper to stay on the field, because what's going to happen is they're going to try and win the fight and they're going to niggle you like a good Dave Rennie team does, which is why I love him. So there's going to be physicality. It's not all going to be technical. These guys aren't coming to kind of fence with you. They're coming with a broadsword and they're going to try and bash your shield. And I don't think they've got the capacity to get it right. But if you get caught up in that stuff, they can catch you. You find 2 or 3 Oaks with 4 match suspensions, that does change the picture a bit for you. So I think the key is to be able to be as physical as we are without kind of going across the line. That's going to be a key sort of battleground.
if you look at the three test matches from the box side, and like we've spoken, the run on 15, preferred one, loaded with World Cup winners, the 23, we kind of like know where his favorite team is. We won't say his best team because he says there is no A, B, and C, but there's kind of a favorite team. Who would have made the biggest gains for you over these three test matches in terms of working their way closer to that 23?
Yeah, so I think, you know, his locked-in guys, his double world champions, you can name all of them. Those are the guys that you would think are his first-choice guys. I think Paulie de Villiers made huge strides in his opportunities. He had, I think, 41 minutes less during the Nations Championship than Peter Steph du Toit, double world player of the year, and had more involvements. So he played a half of rugby less, and he had more involvements than, you know, the highest work rate guy in South Africa. So I think Paulie made huge strides. I think he carried the ball 17 times against Wales. You know, that's how they featured him in this Nations Championship. So Russie's had a really, really good look at him. In the Wales game, the error rate was a little bit high and related to the conditions. Like you said, there were four turnovers, I think seven turnovers from Peter Steph and Paulie together. So that's something that they'll want to tighten up on. But the guy is all over the field. He's involved in every facet of the game. I mean, the Springboks feature him more as a ball carrier than the Stormers do. And the work rate that he has at the Stormers in terms of off the ball stuff is massive. So he's a real challenger, I think, for that sixth jersey, and a guy that will definitely feature in Russie's plans going forward. I think we just got confirmation of guys who've been out injured who've come back. Gerard Steenkamp is a guy you mentioned. Great scrummaging performance. He's a real talent. We added the depth of a guy like Carl Usadi. I thought Ruben van Heerden had a great game on his debut. Those would be the guys that kind of stand out. Great to see Kobus Reinach back to his best. I thought Fussy struggled a bit at fullback. I think whenever he gets a gap again to play, he needs to put his best foot forward there. I thought Vusi Moyo did well, limited opportunity in a bit of a makeshift team and a very young player. And then Herschel Jantjies, mate, came out of the blue. You know, say what you want about Hershey. Hershey has X factor in both pockets. Like that guy, he's a rocket. He can make things happen out of nothing. I mean, that's the juice that got him into the Bok team in the first place. You think of some of the great tries of Russie's era, and Hershey's got a hand in those things. And he did it again on the weekend. He's a guy who can, it looks like nothing's on, and he just sees it. He sees that opportunity, he sees the space, and he's great at reacting to it. So I thought he was very good as well.
Another inspired selection from Russie, where we look at a Graham Williams, a Kobus Reinach, who's come back to the country playing for the Stormers. Fafu's now returned. A lot of youngsters in the under-20 setup. Pete, who's playing for the Lions, and boom, he brings Herschel Jantjies back from Bayonne and says he's been playing well, and I'm going to actually have another look at him. And then the guy, again, admittedly, not the best opposition, but also I thought negotiating those conditions was going to be the toughest battle that the Bok had as opposed to the opposition. Mm. But just shows, and he looks leaner, and he looks fit, and he looks motivated. And again, like nothing like a change in one's life to get you back to where you can be. I just felt that he was a big winner. Limited game time again. I thought Kobus Reinach was outstanding. For me, he was my... I know Paul de Villiers, player of the match. He's the ANG SA Rugby Magazine, voted by MVP, voted by the people, player of the match. But I just thought that first 50 minutes from Kobus Reinach, he looked like a 21-year-old making his debut. He was so physical. And when the Bok pack went forward, he put such pressure on the 8 and on the 9 of Wales and kind of ensured that that ball wasn't just kind of moved quickly. He made that scrum dominance count with that first phase of play afterwards through the pressure he was putting on their back row and also their 9.
Yeah, no, he was fabulous. And I mean, I think any, taking nothing away from Kobe or Hershey, they had a great game, but any 9 that plays behind that scrum, mate, just the ability to just roll Wales like they did is a holiday. Fantastic. So Kobus used his speed again to score a great try off the base, up to 100 test points. I thought both those halfbacks were good.
Well, if you look, and I mean, obviously we do the Steco hybrid power play every single week when the Bok play. The three that was identified when I spoke to you on Saturday night, Jasper Visser's try, the scrum, and everyone's saying Carl Usadi, but Steenkamp was as much to do with the way that scrum went back by 5 meters, that Welsh scrum, and then Yaku Williams' try as well. Which one do you give?
Oh, mate. I mean, Jasper Visser's rumble was glorious. He ran such a sweet short line and just went straight through. It's always nice to see the big fellas go. Yaku Williams's try was a good one. Kirby great with the high ball and the offload and getting it going. And nice to see the rookie get across the try line. But I'm going to go with the eight guys in that scrum, mate. That is a thing of beauty. Hours and hours and hours of work go into creating that synergy and that cohesion to do that. Just embarrass eight international forwards like that is something spectacular. So I'm going to go with the scrum.
All right. And last week, when we played Scotland, everyone, you voted for Ambrose Papier. The fans voted for Buan Fente, basically doing a squat with Kobus Visser. World Rugby still hasn't outlawed that until we do it the next time. So that was the Steco hybrid power play of the week against Scotland. You can go on and you can kind of vote for this one this week on SA Rugby Magazine's social media platforms, on our social media platforms, the Keir and Zell Show. And obviously go to keir.co.za and you can see, is it Jasper Visser's try? Is it that scrum? Was it Yaku Williams' try? Yaku Williams on debut. And while you're thinking about that and the tool that you can win, just think about this.
Some players choose a side. They've always said a back can never be a forward. But with Steco, Ryobi didn't just reinvent the rules. It changed the entire game. Hybrid tools for a hybrid craftsman. Steco, shaping the future. 40 years of Ryobi credibility.
Back-to-back world champions, back-to-back sevens champions. Now back-to-back under 20 world championship champions. A bit tongue-tied there. Incredible that they've now gone 18 matches unbeaten, this under 20 side under Kevin Foote. Incredible that they play so many games. They used to play so many games. It's 17 matches won, and then the draw against New Zealand when they won the Sanzar Rugby Championship earlier this year at 29-all draw. 10 of those 18 have been at two successive world championships, both played in Georgia. That's how they want to play everything in Georgia, okay? And two away when they played in Georgia against Georgia as the warm-ups, and then the rest in South Africa. But an incredible accomplishment for these under-20s.
Yeah, I think those two things go hand in hand. You know, I think in the old days, the junior box kind of assembled at the airport and did a few shuttles on the plane over. Like, they didn't have a lot of time together. They're spending a lot more time in camp now than they used to, and they've scheduled fixtures for these guys to play more, and there's more cohesion, and you can see it on the field. So fantastic for everybody involved in making that happen, and obviously for everything that went into putting this team together for the World Championship. Superb, and they've got a ton of great players there. The majority of those guys are going to be into the URC at some point in the next couple of seasons, and the public is going to be screaming for them to get game time and play. I thought they were exceptional. They won a final where they had three tries, I think it was, disallowed or reversed by the TMO. To keep your composure in those sort of situations and to kind of complete it against a quality French team that had beaten the All Blacks is the right way to win this championship. And just great credit to everybody involved, from the players to the management team.
So Kevin Foote has done an outstanding job. Dave Vessels obviously has been involved as well. Russie's works very closely with these under-20 players, and you've seen that by how many he picked in his extended Springbok squad that played against the Barbarians and played against the Zimbabwe Sables. If you look at those under-20s who went over now, do you see anyone breaking into the Springbok setup before the end of this year?
Before the end of this year?
This year. I'm not talking about the rivalry tour now. Before the end of this year.
So when you say breaking into the Springbok team, I think a couple of them may get a test cap.
Like that's what I'm talking
about. Yeah, you may get a guy who plays off the bench. Like, I mean, I'm not saying these guys are ready to start every single test match, but Russie, I could totally see him rolling the dice with somebody, giving Marcus Miller a go off the bench, you know. I could see that kind of thing happening. Or Yakin Ahmed, he might go, listen, let's see what this kid's got. He did it with Vusi Moya. I know it was Wales, but you can kind of see that happening. At some point in the course of this year, they finished the season with Italy, France, and Ireland. That Italy game is a great opportunity to do something like that. I could totally see some of these guys playing. In terms of the World Cup squad, that's a different conversation. But I think a lot of these kids are you know, they're excited, they're successful, they're motivated, they're fit. And Rassie has shown that he's not afraid to give Oaks a shot. And so I would encourage all of those guys to be ready when they get that shot to impress him. And I think you will see. One or two of those guys will go.
What did you make of Yakin?
I thought he was good, mate. He's an exciting playmaker. I mean, he's a skillful playmaker. He's very much an attacking fly half, takes the ball to the line, backs himself athletically to have a go. Obviously, great distribution, good kicking game, and a feisty little combative guy, you know, in contact. So I think he's a pretty good all-rounder. He's playing the game at the speed of the under-20s at the moment, and his next step is to do that at the next level, at the senior level. But there are no red flags in that guy's game where you go like, oof, this is a problem. He can't catch and pass. He can't tackle. He doesn't want to kick. He's got everything that you need there. So I thought he was very, very good. In a way, he kind of took over the mantle that Ashim Pete had at nine last season. He became that X-factor explosive guy. So I think you could argue that maybe he uses a lot of ball, and there's guys outside him like Ethan Adams and Marcus Miller who may have benefited from more of a distributor. But the junior box won the junior world championship, and I think he was absolutely at the center of all of that.
Talking about a Marcus Miller, I don't think there's ever been such fanfare about a player that's come into the under-20 ranks and 18 years old, that's come into the Stormers setup. What has impressed you about the way he's just handled himself?
Yeah, so what I like about him is he doesn't try to live up to that hype in every game. He just does the basics very, very well. And he's content to do that. He's not trying to be the next Springbok prodigy. You know, he's not trying to score 58 tries a game to grab the headlines every time he touches the ball. He's just doing what's best for the team in every moment. And I think that earns him credibility and respect in the team environment, and certainly earns him trust with the coaches. And the future is obviously very bright for him, as well as Ethan Adams on his inside, who's an absolute tank.
I mean, Miller doesn't play like he's 18 years old.
No.
He plays like he's been around for like a decade.
Spot on. Yeah, that's better said than what I said. That's exactly what I mean. There's a maturity about him. Yeah.
Who was your star from the under-20s?
Oof.
Or is that...
I don't know. I don't know if there was an outside singular star. It was great to see Chesil Eustace still being a rocket, still being a danger man. He really is an exciting prospect there. You know, you've got like durability concerns with him, I suppose, because of his size. But speed and finishing ability in us is all there. So he was exciting to watch. Marcus Miller wasn't flashy, but was very good. Ethan Adams is the guy that stands out in that back line. Chad Kemp had a great campaign. Ahmed had a great campaign. And those forwards obviously laid the foundation, despite the fact they were missing Riley Norton. So it was really a team effort. It wasn't just one guy. It wasn't just one big oak running through guys and offloading and try time. I thought it was a real team effort there.
And what do you make of South African rugby right at the moment? As I said, back-to-back sevens, champions of the world, under-20 champions of the world. We've dominated on the under-18 scene when we've hosted series here, and obviously the box and the under-20s. Like, has there ever been a generation as golden as this, as healthy as this in South African rugby?
No, I don't think so. I think we are very, very well prepared, and not just in the here and now, but for at least one more generation of players. Like, the pathways have all been set in place. Everybody's coming through like they should. I think our golden era is magnified by other nations being close to their worst. I think when countries like England and Australia and Ireland remember that they need to eat red meat and be in the sun a bit more, I think you're going to see those guys start to bounce back. Maybe get off their phones a little bit, those kids. I think you'll see them start to fight their way back, but that's a long way off. I mean, there's nobody who comes close to what we've got in terms of depth, physicality. Few teams can match us. You know, everything is set in place to dominate now and for the foreseeable future.
Would you say that the lesson to the rest of the rugby playing world would be to look at what the South African leadership has done with a guy like Rassie Rasmussen, Jacques Nienhaber, who I'm sure will come back into the fold when he's available. But you've got the license to build. You've got 8 years. Because we look back at 2018, those first 14 test matches in charge, and they had to sift through how many players, decide who they wanted, what they wanted, and kind of from 2019 onwards. And we forget, they took a big one in Mendoza in 2018. They lost in Brisbane, and then they got that win against New Zealand 36-34, and Broden Barrett hit the post. Then they lost at home. They were 30-13 up. They lost 32-30 at Loftus. Richie Mohanga kicked that conversion from the corner, and Artie Sevier scored. That to take that 2018 South African season, and you talk about like a Dave Rennie, and say, give this guy time to develop a team, and he may win you back-to-back World Cups, back-to-back rugby championships. Is there a lesson in that to understand who you've got and why you've got them, as opposed to then to also back a donkey indefinitely?
Yeah, I think you're 100% spot on there. And I think you've got to be very careful about who you give the keys to the Lamborghini to. Because if you give it to the wrong guy, you're in a deep hole. But I think New Zealand is a very good example. Historically, New Zealand have been leaders in rugby thought. You know, they've been a nation that South Africa has followed for a long time. They're not there now, but I think the installment of Rennie is a reversion to that sort of time. They've shown some retrograde understanding of who they need to be in that job. And I think the more latitude that Rennie has to do what he needs to do, the better New Zealand will be. I think historically, especially in the home unions, the old boys club becomes a bit of an anvil, you know, that holds the team back. I think professionalism is resisted probably there more than here. I think there are some still sort of holdovers from the amateur era. As much as we all love parts of that, I think if you want to be successful at this, you've got to be professional. And it's beyond just what you eat and what you drink and whether you sleep and blah, blah, blah. The professionalism has got to seep into every facet of that management team, and the administration has got to kind of stay out of the way. So, you know, Eddie Jones, for all his faults, turned England into a serious contender, took them to the World Cup final, but then wasn't fashionable enough and had to be ejected. I think the home unions need to recover from that kind of thinking and find the guy who can get them playing their best rugby on the field and getting the most points on the field. I think that needs to be top of agenda.
Well, I mean, you talk about antiquated. The whole Richie Mohanga thing is just ridiculous.
Correct.
He's got to play in the NPC before he can come on tour to South Africa. And you've got to have a 10 that gets injured. If a lock goes down, you can't replace him because he hasn't played in the NPC. I mean, it's just madness. And kind of we've spoken about that at length. If you look at the Nations Championship, the last July we've had, first time ever they've kind of taken these matches and put a tournament behind it. Where do you rank it in terms of success? The madness, obviously, that Fiji has to play their home game against Scotland at Murrayfield. Let's take that out of the equation. They say it's travel, they say it's commercial, but it's just that it just makes it skewed. Where do you rank the competition at the moment?
I think it's a great addition to the rugby calendar. I think probably long overdue to make these tests mean something and be something more than just development. I think there are some logistical issues that need to be resolved. Going forward, like long term, you can't have Fiji playing their games in the UK, even though commercially it makes sense. Half of their players are there and Fiji probably makes more money out of it. It kind of disrupts the entire format, doesn't it? It kind of you lose credibility like that. It's like if New Zealand had to play all of their home games in Argentina. It just wouldn't make any sense. Like there's no logic behind that from a competition point of view. So to keep the parity where you need it to be, I think that is something. I think the Northern Hemisphere teams have a legitimate gripe about the fact that the Southern Hemisphere teams are spread across the latitude of the globe. Whereas if you play in November, you can basically walk from England to Wales. You know, you could walk from Murrayfield to Twickenham. So there is a logistical issue there that can't be resolved. But that is just the nature of it, I suppose.
And then the formatting. So a lot of people said to me over the weekend, like, but New Zealand's 2, South Africa's 1, that should be the final. But it's not that.
Yeah.
The formatting is who's the best of the North.
Correct.
And who's the best of the South, given kind of their 6 matches.
Spot on.
And that adds a different flavor because it's not about this is the 2 best teams in the world playing each other. We've always said, like, 6 Nations champions play the rugby championship.
Completely.
Champions, who's the best in that year.
Completely.
This basically gives you a showdown of who's the best, and it's an earned thing.
Totally. I agree with that 100%. Otherwise, you'd just be having a World Cup, wouldn't you? I mean, the USP of this is that it's the best of the North versus the best of the South. I love that element of it. Even though the 2 best teams in the world are both going to be in the South, I think having a North versus South champion at the end of this is exactly what makes this Nations Championship worthwhile.
But as you say, tougher for them to travel all across the globe, easier for our teams, because once you get into Europe, you're basically there. The longest flight is 2 hours to some place. No time differences. So who has impressed you most from the north?
Oof. I mean, France are the form team there. I keep feeling like England has the cattle, if not the mindset, to make some strides there. As much as Ireland irritate me, I feel like Andy Farrell is the right guy for that job. And I just feel like if they lean into some of those Ireland youngsters, there'll be some teething pains, but I think long-term there'll be benefit for them. I think they do need to start shedding some of these older guys, and they've done that with James Lowe. Great players, fabulous players, but reaching their expiry dates. And Ireland have to answer some questions in the tight five to be competitive again. Scotland is tough to take seriously. Italy, always rooting for Italy. I think, you know, player depth is obviously an issue there. They struggled in this start to the Nations Championship, but a guy like Menoncello just reminds you why, you know, you enjoy watching Italy. There's just that sort of underdog tag with them, and they've got some guys with grit to really step up. And then Wales, you know, it's sad to see them as low as they are. They need to turn things around there again. I'm not sure what the pathway back to the top is, but I would say the Northern Hemisphere team that impresses the most is obviously France. They've got the most depth. They're European champions. And that's the team that is the bull of the North.
All right. It's been a full-on month of July. It's been Nations Championship. We are getting so pumped for rugby's greatest rivalry, but it'd be amiss of me not to mention that the Stormers 23 beat Griquas in the Currie Cup on the weekend. On Friday night, Zales, you were there. You were one of three people at the stadium, and I enjoyed that. You asked me where I was. I said, I'm the guy wearing the blue and white. I'm sitting at home, and it was Argentina, not the Stormers. But was it a case of they just had to change their name to finally beat Griquas?
I don't know, mate. I don't know. I do know it was a great win. It's a proper Griquas team, that defending champions. And to come out in their first match, a team that hasn't played a lot together, and find a way to win was great. It was great to watch. It was a good game. It was an exciting game.
Okay, so no SA under-20s, no Springboks, no URC, no Investec Champions Cup, no Super Rugby. Japan League One is resting. So for the next fortnight, we're going to have to talk about the Currie Cup.
This show is brought to you by Auto and General, insurance that stands with you through every collision.